first to the roof with a beautiful introduction. Rebbe should have a full shlema. Right again, the roof for inviting me. It's always a privilege to be here. Rabbi Muscat for contacting me and arranging it. Daniel Weiner, who got up very early this morning to pick me up at the airport. And indeed, the entire Chicago Center, which is known for its as a hub, it's known throughout the United States as a hub, as Americans of Torah and Chesed. I'm very privileged to be on the Simcha Davis Legal Holiday Program. That family should be gesund and should be convinced for the Torah that they helped disseminate. Now, the Rav mentioned that Shlomo Hyman mentioned the famous story of Shlomo Hyman when he came to Torah V'Dat one snowy morning, and there were only four boys there, and as the Rav so beautifully said over, when they said to the Rebbe, "You know, you don't have to scream in your usual fashion," he said, "I'm not just speaking to you, I'm speaking to you, children, right from the Rebbe," so beautifully related. I have to admit, it reminded me that years ago, I had the merit of hearing shiurim from Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the Colonel of Rafa, who was aided by Rabbi Shaber, Rosh Hashiva in his own right. And I remember when I was hearing shiurim from him, he was also extremely, extremely machped, irrespective of what was going on around, that even if it was the end of the zman and only one or two boys were going to show, he nevertheless, he was very, very consistent and very insistent on giving the shiur in the regular way, in the regular length of time. And once privately I asked him, Rebbe, if there's only at a shiur of 30, 35, why is only one or two boys come? Why bother? So it's interesting when he answered me, which is a person I think who lived here as well, or certainly not far, that he remembered that when he was learning in Masechtah Chayim Berlin in Brooklyn, so his Rebbe was Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zecharo Livracha. At that point, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, going back to the, imagine it was the early 50s perhaps, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik had the unique distinction of being probably the only person who simultaneously was a Rebbe both at Masechtah Chayim Berlin in Brooklyn and in Yeshiva Sravenu Yitzchok Alfanon at YU in Washington Heights. Simultaneously, he was a Rebbe at both places. And he lived in Washington Heights. And at that point, it was the summer, late 40s, early 50s, and the majority of the boys in Chaim Berlin already wasn't now, or it's such an official setup, but most of the boys had gone off to the country, like so many boys in New York do, to Camp Morris. But nevertheless, the yeshiva officially still functioned into the summer Ben Azman. And Lichtenstein mentioned that he saw that Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, who lived in Washington Heights, he had to take three trains, three subways in the middle of July, in the middle of the humidity, in the middle of the hot New York summer, to come to Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn to give a shiur. Notwithstanding that, as opposed to the usual 30, 40 boys who were present, it was reduced substantially to a fraction of that number. But nevertheless, he said to Rav Lichtenstein that he noticed that Rav Aaron never changed, Lo Shina, Malamed Shelo Shina. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik came in every day. He came in with his tie and his hat and his jacket and sat for 2 hours on the train. And never, there was never any inkling in any aspect of his giving deliverance of the shiur, his preparation for the shiur, that it was any different than whether there were 50 people present or 3 people present. So too, I heard from the same person, Shiva, Mayor Sterling, should live and be well. He told me once that he met a Yid who first met the Satmar Rav, the Zecharo Livracha, when he first came to Brooklyn in a very small island. Very, very small island. Or perhaps he remembered him even for his time in Yerushalayim. I don't exactly remember. But he had a very small island, being it was Yerushalayim, being when he first came to New York. Then he came to much many years later, 20, 30 years later, when he was obviously a very, very, had a very large eilim. And he remarked how he recalled that the Satmar of Davin, the exact same davening that he saw him daven when he had a minyan mitzumtzum of 11, 12 people, was the same davening when he had thousands of chassidim. So as the Rav mentioned so beautifully, when it comes to Torah, the Torah is something that without, of course, we want to have quantity, but the Iker actually is the quality of the Torah, and the Torah has this power to transcend the time and the place and even the numbers of people who were present. But with that, I want to speak a little bit about insurance. I want to first give a... I want to mention very clearly that any questions that halacha have to be answered by the Rav. I am very, very makpid, I'm very careful that I don't come to a place to tell you what to do api halacha. The only person who can tell you what to do api halacha is the Rav. The Rav goes, whatever he passes, that's what goes. Even if I go through the sukkah and I say certain shittas, but that, I'm not talking halacha l'maisa. I'm not talking halacha l'maisa. Only the Rav Pas can say halacha l'maisa. So I just want to make that very, very clear from the start. So the question of insurance, specifically let's talk about life insurance, but it's not limited to that, of course. The question of insurance is actually a somewhat of a new question. If one looks just up historically, insurance really didn't get going as a business, actually, almost into the 19th century. In the 1800s, the idea of selling life insurance became a business. There were attempts beforehand, but you find that it's a new phenomenon. And honestly, that new phenomenon, in and of itself, generated a sense of uncertainty vis-a-vis, honestly, Yiddishkeit, which we're going to be discussing, of course, but honestly, even religion in general, basically, it was something new. It was something new, something novel. Whoever heard of this thing, you paid money that perhaps, chas v'shalom, the person who pays money shall die in order that somebody else could get the money. I just point that again just to give background, historical background. Actually, the Christian clergy were even more against, we find initially, against insurance than even the Habdil of Elfafay Abdullah, than the Yiddish sources. They write in the encyclopedia, mighty arguments were offered against life insurance. Among them, the following reflects trust in man rather than in a God. Lack of bitachon. It means to become unequally yoked together with the unbelievers, meaning a person shouldn't be mechaber with all types of other types of people. It's equivalent to merchandising human life, putting monetary price on human life. And how can you put an erech on someone's life, a human? It also is considered unholy, since a person is part of the Tzelem Elohim, And they also said that the whole thing was commercial business, that companies didn't really care to help the needy, but they always sought to try to only give insurance to or sell insurance policies to healthy people in order that they could make money. So the point is that when insurance really did get started, it was circumspect by, I think, religious people in general. What is this new thing that you're going to, quote unquote, even the word itself, guarantee? You're going to guarantee my life. I'm going to guarantee my life. I'm going to insure my life. Even the word itself sounds kafir, David. I'm going to insure my life. You guarantee my life. So we find, obviously, I want to look at two specific contemporary poskim of the 20th century, and then a little bit, also again, a couple of other points. So, obviously every important question in America or North America or in Godless in general, the diaspora in general, obviously came to the desk at Ramesh Feinstein, and so too we find that the Chav Zayin Marfesh Toshin Chav Dalin, which is probably about November 1963, Ramesh Feinstein was asked, is it allowed to get insurance? And the question was, L'havdil al-fafei avdolos, like we saw before, bayenim, that is a lack of bitachon in the Eibishter. I mean, HaKadosh Baruch Hu can provide for all. So what are you sort of like, I'm going to take HaKadosh Baruch Hu's job. So Rav Moshe right away says he doesn't understand. He doesn't understand that there's any issue whatsoever. He writes, again, Rav Moshe's style was he never writes the question. However, he summarizes usually the first paragraph of an answer that you're able to ascertain more or less what the question was. So he says, "Yishmaila ogami is a chash iser. Perhaps there's some suspicion of iser likat insurance, to take insurance policy, an insurance policy. Mitzatu chas v'shalom kichosel lo bitochen b'Hashem Yisbarach. Sheyicholka l'oishro. You're being, it's a lack of bitochen Hashem. Hashem can take care of you. Hashem can make you wealthy. You have to go worry about what's going to be after 120 years. The Eibishter himself can go ahead and take care of it." So right away, Rav Moshe says, again, kedarko v'kedesh, without sources, without, you know, quoting on any Gemaras for that matter, he just says right away, there's certainly no lack of bitachon. And again, he says this, what, a svara pshuta, who can call in yoni meskar shadom lo raksha rashai, elogam mechuyot lasos meskar vavod leparnosos. He says, what do you mean? Part of being in this world, that there are no free lunches. That's just a clown in this world. Even though right now we came out, there was free breakfast outside, the bagel, it was creepy, it was very, very beautiful, of the chesed of the shul. Somebody paid for it. Somebody paid for it. They didn't come free. And even if the baker had donated, it didn't come free. So somehow that food was paid for somewhere along the line. So we all know in this world you have to work. You have to do ishtadlus. That's part of it. We're not dealing with the question how much ishtadlus, etc. Different shaila. But a person has to do ishtadlus. Is mechuyev lasos meskar vavod leparnoso. A person is obligated to work some business or some work, some sort of job, some sort of trade. V'asim lo lamash afim lo yasekum. Yasmin Hashem is brought parnasa meizon. If you're not allowed to say it's usher, to say that Hashem will provide me with money, and therefore he says that it's usher to smoke. It's usher to rely that Hashem is going to give you parnasa without working. Obviously, he points out Rav Moshe Tzarech Leida. A person always has to know and keep paramount in their mind. Mashem Arviach, Mavodoso, Besparo, Hurat, Hashem Yisparach. Everything that you profit, that you make, any money that you accrue, is always only from Hashem Yisparach. Kemoshe Nitzel Ben Rosh Hashanah, whatever, how we dabbled on Rosh Hashanah, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu decided we're going to get this salary, this amount of money. Obviously, it's from Hashem Yisparach. But that money that's diktav lanu on Rosh Hashanah is totally on that we're going to do the hishtadlus. Again, the Moshe indicates l'masha l'maha d'avon d'vayim, and what is this akin to is that you hire somebody to clean the shul, and you tell them you'll mop the shul, sweep the shul four times a day, and I'll pay you $500 a week. And then you come in and you see the guy is not doing it. He's sitting around. Relax, you know to do it. So he says, okay, you're fired. I says, what, okay, I'm fired, but you gotta still pay me. Why? What do you mean? We made a contract. Yeah, if I didn't make a contract. The contract is based and stipulated on the fact that you will do what you had to do. Once you don't do what you had to do, so obviously you're not gonna get paid. So too, but Baruch Hu doesn't make a contract with us on every Rosh Hashanah. But that contract of Rosh Hashanah is totally dependent on us doing our part, which is the obligation to work and to make money. So where does that come from? Where does it come from that there's an obligation to work? Where is an obligation to work that you must work? Not just you could work, greater than you must work. It's interesting, Rav Moshe said it's based on a pasuk that any of our separations. Shtek pasuk, b'zeh sapecha tzarecha lechem. It says for the sweat of your brow, you're going to eat bread. I mean, it's not just it's a reality. Only if you sweat, only if you work, are you going to get bread. That's what it says in Pasuk. It's fascinating. It doesn't quote the Gemara there, and Brachas, and Machlokes, and the Sixth Paragraph, it doesn't quote that at all. He just said the Pasuk says very simply, then he also quotes one other source. Also, it was so familiar at the end of Kedushin, at the end of Masechta Kedushin, there's a very long Mishnah. A very long Mishnah that talks about what parnasa you should teach your son, what should you teach your son to do, how, if you should teach, etc., etc. Anyway, towards the end of that Mishnah, the Mishnah has a sort of like a question, a muscle. The Mishnah there says that one of the Tanaim says, I don't understand. You have a dog, let's say, a person has a pet, it's a dog. So the dog, Lamaisa, does he work? No. The dog doesn't even work. It sleeps most of the day. The Shabbat sort of, the Mishnah says, that you say, a behema, lo barasa elo l'shamshedi. You created the dog to serve you. It'll be a guard dog, a watch dog, whatever it is. Service dog, whatever it is. But nevertheless, he doesn't have to work for his food. You don't tell the dog, by the way, you have to work. You better work. You have to clean up the house, do this, do that, and then you'll get fed. It doesn't work like that. Even in the wild, they say a lion eats once every 2-3 days, he kills an antelope, and then he sleeps. He sleeps 22 hours a day after that for the next 2-3 days. So how come we have to work? The Mishnah asks. Why do we have to work? If we were created to serve Hashem, the animals which were created to serve us, they don't have to work. We who were created to serve Hashem, why do we have to work? So the Tana says, you're right, we really shouldn't have to work. However, and he quotes the famous phrase, Harayurisius Masai Nikipaktius Parnasosi. However, when we did the Aveira of Gan Eden, when we were thrown out of Gan Eden, Harayurisius Masai, I acted improperly. I did a misdeed. Harayurisius, I did ra, I did bad in my actions. And we got thrown out of Gan Eden. At that point, the punishment was, or the reality was, kipakti is parnasasi. I corrupted my parnasa, I ruined my parnasa, kipakti is parnasasi. And that's a reality. That's a reality. Notwithstanding the fact that you have to always realize that a kodesh baruch hu is who knows sen lachem, Hashem is the one, he who gives the food, he gives sustenance, and our hishtadlus is a necessary component for the ultimate decision of how much we should get and when we should get is in the hands of Hashem and Hashem alone. But notwithstanding that reality, a person has to know that they have to work. They have to work. And it's interesting, Rav Moshe says there's apparently an opposing Tana in that mission. The opposing Tana in the mission is Rav Nahum Roy. Rav Nahum Roy, he says, I'm not going to teach, I'm only going to teach my son Torah, I'm not going to teach him Parnasa. So Rav Moshe points out that he's only saying when he's younger. The first opinion says that even when he's younger, he should have a decent education and how to make a living. From the Roy is saying that no, maybe when you're younger, you should have a Torah only approach. But even he holds, when you get older, you have to have some sort of parnasa to make a living. And he doesn't pass the show mean that there's no opinion. So therefore, Rav Moshe says that a person A is obligated to make a living, and a person can't be relying on the nace, and therefore he comes to the conclusion that certainly our generation should be Dorein Hashanah Yasmei Diyasmei. We are an orphan generation, orphans of orphans. Sha'azalan l'smeich al ha'nace, we can't rely on any sort of miracle, and therefore we have to realize that we have to work, we have to get work. So too, Rav Moshe says, "Gam ha'insurance who kicholin yoni mestar v'chadayma she'osin the parnasas atzma, the parnasas bonav she'rishoyim dikat lozeh kevan shumayse parnasa." So too, insurance is part of making parnasa. It's like any other business you engage in that you have to support yourself and your family after you. Whatever it is, for instance, whatever it happens to be, people, whatever, some people in, excuse me, in Chicago, at one point they decided they're going to, whatever, go into nursing homes. So, okay, so the nursing home trade became a way of making a living, and being a way of making, not just a living for the person, but hopefully it ensured that even the children will have what? The children will have a business. The children can expand the business. It's no different than any other business a person begins, that often they'll bring their children, you know, aboard, and the children perhaps will even expand the existing ACE, the existing business. So too, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Rav Moshe says that part of making a living is guaranteeing, excuse me, they will have money. How do you, not guaranteeing in the literal way, but attempting to guarantee that you'll have an input of money. So part of that is nowadays in the church. The church is accepted as an acceptable way to have an input. So therefore he says, and he writes even, Hashem Yisbarach, actually, he is the one that gave them the Doros HaFron. I mean, there he's referencing what I mentioned at the beginning of the Shia. He admits it sounds like a newfangled thing, and usually we say Chodosh Asa Min HaTorah, how are we having a newfangled thing? But Rambam said, no, Hashem put it in the Doros HaFronim She'isik Zeh Shel Insurance Ma'olam. Hashem said, put this in, that we should be able to have beneficiaries, and our beneficiaries should be properly supported. And he said, Dover Toyer V'ra'ul. It's a good thing, and it's a worthy thing, and it's a proper thing, and people should do it. Gav L'Anoshim K'sherim, Yireh Hashem Yisbarach. Even people who are kosher and fear Hashem, who both him and they trust Rak Al Hashem. Shehu Anosim Eitza, that he's the one who gives Eitza. In this case, he gives the Eitza, L'Mikneh Nechasim, to acquire this idea of the insurance policy. So therefore, now what he's doing over here in Moshe, when he writes that it's a proper thing to do, it's toiv v'roi, it's good, it's worthy, and it's obligatory, even for people who are kosher, even people who are boteach l'Hashem, what he's doing over here, ostensibly what he's doing is mavorning, he's going ahead and he's preempting an argument which often appears in his Jews. For instance, many of us are familiar, his famous tshuva, of course, with Kol Yisrael. So we all know that the fact that American Jewry is so much Orthodox Jewry in America is not careful to only drink or consume Kol Yisrael products, but rather they rely on the Heter of Moshe, finding that the USDA is sufficient supervision that the milk is permissible. We all know that at the end, Rav Moshe says, but if a person wants to be a Baal Nefesh, it's a good idea to be Machmir. He writes, he himself is Machmir. So, whenever we find there's some sort of like hedging, at that point it's allowed, but nevertheless, over here by insurance, I think he doesn't want to say that. Over here by insurance, I think he doesn't want to leave room to say, okay, if you're a person, okay, you're a mediocre type of person, okay, you can get insurance. But a real kosher, boteach b'Hashem, perhaps shouldn't. He says, no, that's not true. Because Misha Kone insurance, who Nami Achas Hashem Yisbarach, whoever buys insurance, that's from the Eitz of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and boteach al Hashem Yisbarach, and he still is relying on Hashem. What's he relying on Hashem? He's relying on Hashem, Shiyuchal L'Shalem B'Agiyah Hazman B'Chol Shon. V'zeu HaBitachat Sh'anu M'chuyav. How are you going to pay the premium? You still have to pay the premium every year. You still have to pay the premium of the insurance. So there is this element of bitachon that you'll be able to pay the premium. And therefore, Rav Moshe writes at the end of the tshuva by saying that aim is a shum chisaron. There's nothing lacking in bitachon to take insurance. And he says, the commotion now will have to call ha'olam af yirei Hashem Yisbarach b'yoseh. As is known that everybody takes it, the whole world, even those who fear Hashem B'yeshev. So Rav Moshe is very clear, and he's very actually to the point. He says it's part of the idea that we have a B'zeyas HaKachatai Chalata. You have to work for a living. And part of working for a living in our modern world is this idea, an insurance policy is part of the normative type of hishtadlus that a person should do to ensure their financial security. No difference than, honestly, than getting a job. Most of us, you try to get a job that has some sort of job security to it. You try to get a job which has some sort of future to it. That's the normative way. Nobody knows the future. So too, insurance is the normative way to try to ensure, to try to do the hishtadlus at least, that your children will not be left impoverished if, in the wake of, God forbid, of an untimely death. The second approach I wanted to mention is the approach of a contemporary, but a later contemporary. That's on the other side of Rav Avadya Yosef in Yechavadas Kalakim Osim Pehe. So Rav Avadya Yosef starts off exactly like Rav Moshe, with a difference. He quotes a Medrash. The Medrash says that the Pasuk says, Hashem will bless you with anything you do. So the Medrash said, Yechoye Yoshev Bokul. Maybe Hashem will bless you if you sit around and you do nothing. So then the Pasuk answers, no, the Fellowship has said, Imosim is Baruch, Imenos Enom is Baruch. If you do, you'll be banished. If you don't do, you won't do that. So therefore, Rav Avadya comes to the same conclusion of Rav Moshe, that there's mutalus chovas haishtadlus l'parnasa. There's on the person incumbent an obligatory command to involve oneself in their parnasa. Obviously, he adds the caveat, sha'alav l'vtoch b'Hashem. You have to trust in Hashem. Sha'idei hishtadlus l'yamsi l'parnasa. Obviously, ultimately, Hashem decides if it's going to be successful or not. But you have to work for parnasa. You have to work for parnasa. And he says that's simple. He quotes a few other sources from the Meiri. He says that's very clear. And at this point, he says, and in the end, he does quote even Rav Moshe, to say it's clear that a person has an obligation to hishtadlus, normative hishtadlus in this world. So just like normative hishtadlus, you don't take a job. Most of us, if you have to, I guess you have to. Most of us don't stand in front of Home Depot every day and wait for the people to come by, you know, with flatbed trucks, whatever, and say, I need a few workers today for $15, $18, $20 an hour for today for one day's work. Most of us try to get employment where there's some sort of secure employment, and obviously for a longer period of time. But then Rav Avadya Yosef takes a fascinating different turn. He wants to attempt to prove that the idea of trusting in Hashem should never be interpreted as this blanket statement that Hashem will always provide, notwithstanding the circumstances. Rather, he claims that not just does he leave it, then we have an obligation to try to make a living. Try to make a living, or get a job, that we understand is something obligatory on the individual. However, Rav Avadya Yosef takes it a step further, that if socio-economic circumstances change, it actually can override existing halachas, notwithstanding you might think that you should rely on Boteach HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Namely, what? So, fascinatingly, many of us don't know this, but in the sugya of ribis of interest, which is a very difficult sugya. But the sugya of ribis, so we all know that it's mutter to take interest from a goy. We know it's mutter to take, you can't take interest from a yid, you can take interest from a goy. Many of us don't know that it's the paskid in Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch paskid, that nevertheless there's an issue that I wanted to take interest from a goy. To lend him money with interest is an issue that I wanted. There's only paskid in the Shulchan Aruch that it's an issue that Rabbanan to lend money with interest to a goy. Why? And the Shulchan Aruch says, Shema Yilman B'Maisiv. What does this mean? It means like this. It means, normally when you lend someone money, hopefully if they're an honest person, it won't happen. But often you lend someone money, the person says, I'll pay you back, Rosh Chodesh, tomorrow, Monday, Rosh Chodesh is tomorrow, I'll pay you back, no problem. Rosh Chodesh comes, you walk past the person, you walk past twice, he doesn't react. Good morning, how are you? Doesn't react. Finally, you wait a few days, wait a month. By the way, I know you didn't say which Rosh Chodesh, but it's already a month or two, you didn't pay. Oh, of course, the check's in the mail, and the check's not in the mail. Okay, I closed that account. Another check coming tomorrow. And finally, you knock on the guy's house, and his wife says, not home. Okay, I'll wait for him to come home. And before you know it, you know the guy's his wife, his children, his daughter, whatever, you know, until you try to finally get the money from the guy. So says the Gemara, that's what's going to happen with the guy. The guy is going to go ahead and close the account. Oh, you have to pay you? Of course I have to pay you. Oh, here you, of course, tomorrow. After tomorrow, nothing about tomorrow. Tomorrow, next week, next month, next year, whatever. I'm having money, I'm withdrawing the money. My mother's sick, blah, blah, blah. And after a while, you're going to be calling him every day, and you're going to be knocking on his door every day, and you're going to sit in his parlor every day. And the next thing you'll know, you see that the guy, this is what Gemara said, I'm not making this up. Gemara says that after a while, you'll start saying, hey, look what he does at night, the guy. He plays poker, he plays cards. Maybe I should play cards once, maybe I should watch his television. Maybe I'll start watching television too. Sounds like an interesting thing, Pastor Shaul. So therefore, Shalma Yilmon B'maisev. It's rabbinically usher to lend a guy money, B'ribis, because by definition, when you lend someone money and you become the creditor, you become the person who's owed the money, by definition, you're going to become involved in them too much that you want until you finally get your money back. So therefore, Chazal said, let's not begin the whole thing. Don't lend money to a goy. But we do lend money to goy. And it's already over 1,000 years that we've been lending money to goy. We all know the Rothschild family and all very famous Jewish banking families, they lent money to goyim. Of course, how did they make their fortune? So this already happened in the time of Rabbeinu Tam. In the time of the Bali Chasis over 1,000 years ago, it already was that people were lending money to goyim. So Chasis says over there, Dafayin Aleph and Boba Mitzia, that we have no choice. Our practice is to be lenient in the Sisset Rabbanim, and we do lend money to goyim with interest, notwithstanding that there's a rabbinic issue. And Taster says, very poshut, is because the goyim basically limited our avenues of parnasa. We weren't allowed to own land in most places. So agricultural investments were precluded from us. We weren't allowed to be in other ventures. So therefore, as he says, Sha'anu Shriyim Meina Umos, Ie Shalamu Listaker, Shub Maso Matu, Im Lodi Sam Nitani Man, Hilkak Eila So Ribis La'aku, Shemi Yomod Nemaisa. And he says, Rabbeinu Tam, that nowadays we wouldn't be able to make a living. If we would observe the system that I'm on, we wouldn't have any livelihood. We wouldn't have any avenue of livelihood. We can't own land. They couldn't be artisans. The guilds, they didn't allow Jews to join the guilds. So the only thing the Jew could do was money lending. So says Tosfos, it's such a situation where we have no other possibility of supporting our families. So we are lenient in this regard, notwithstanding the existing on the books isn't the rabbanim of not lending money to goyim with interest. So says Rav Avadya Yosef, a very interesting chiddush. Rav Avadya Yosef says, "Ein lachush b'zeh mishum choser b'tochem Hashem yisporach." Rav Avadya Yosef is basically asking, I don't understand. How can Rabbeinu Tam say that? Why didn't Rabbeinu Tam say it? If the Chachamim said don't lend money to goyim by interest, so don't lend money to goyim by interest. And Hashem will take care of it. It's Hashem's problem, not yours. It doesn't say that. It says, Rabbeinu Tam said that no, we have to do it because that's the only way, that's the normative way to make a living. The normative way to make a living, given our circumstances, the dire circumstances that we find ourselves now, necessitates us to lend money to the non-Jewish community with interest. And they never felt that this was a lack of bitachon on Hashem They never said Hashem has the ability to support no matter what the circumstances. No. The later authorities, because they saw that, naturally speaking, the normative socioeconomic reality of the Jewish community in the Middle Ages was as such that it necessitated the Jews lending money to the non-Jewish community with interest, notwithstanding the Issur d'Rabbanan, the rabbinic prohibition of lending them money with interest. Nevertheless, because that would be the only way to make money is to do this, so they allowed it. They allowed it. The Rebbe Tal and the other volunteers, they allowed it. They allowed to do this. And interestingly enough, this is the Rambam quotes this already in Shulchan Aruch, that therefore it's not a chisaron b'tochen. It's not lacking b'tochen. And Rav Avadia Yosef wants to extrapolate from that, that you see from there that even if something has a shemitz, has some sort of aspect of prohibition to it, like in this case where it's explicit that there's a rabbinic prohibition on lending money to a goy with interest, but nevertheless, if the socioeconomic forces necessitate that, so you have to act in that way, and it's not a lack of bitachon. It's just considered the normative way of engaging in sustenance for the people, and it's not considered a lack of bitachon. Very interesting, Rav Avadia Yosef, in his tremendous grasp of Bikias, he quotes the Rabbi Eliezer Deutsch, the Shalos HaTshuvos pre-Sotter, who was asked in the contemporary, also 20th century, he asked, can you one take out life insurance? He also said one should take out life insurance. He brings a different proof, which is similar in theme, but from a Tosfos in Kedushin Adav Mem Aleph. Tosfos in Kedushin says the following. We all know there's a halacha that if we have a daughter, we are all allowed to marry off our daughters before the age of 12. We can. 4-year-old girl, nice girl, I've got a man telling me is a boy, whatever, a nice boy. So I can marry my girl off, I can marry my daughter off, my 4-year-old daughter to this man. Even though she's a little girl, there's a kedushin ketana is allowed. Nevertheless, the Gemara tells us, "Asur lo adam shikadoshes bito shiktana." The Gemara says, "Midrabbanan, you're not allowed to marry off your daughter when she's a ketana." Ad shetigdal v'teimah v'plaini, and he writes, "Until she reaches an age of maturity where she's able to say, I want to marry this man. This is the man that I find favor in his eyes." Now, Tosfos says again, but they didn't do that in the times of Tosfos. V'achshav anu nohim l'kadesh noseinu b'shem ketanos. So Tosfos says, wait. Tosfos looks at his Gemara, and he looks around him, and he sees everybody who's from is marrying off their daughter when they're 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and 7. They say, how do the Gemara just said, don't do it. So this is the Rabbana. How do we all do it? So says Rabbi Tam and Meshe Bechol Yom Yom Hagolus Mizgaber Aleinu, because each day the Golus gets stronger and stronger. We may sheep up with the Adam Laseis Levito Nedunya Hagirim, and if a person has the wherewithal to give his daughter a dowry today, Shem Alachar Zman Lo Yes Sheep Up Biyoto. Perhaps later on he won't have the ability. A Tesha Bito Abudu La'olam shall remain an unmarried spinster for the rest of her life. So the Gemara says, right now she's 4 years old, you have a few extra dollars. Marry her off, sign the dowry agreement, give over the dowry agreement, that's it, that money is already given over. Because who knows, if you wait 8 or 9 years for when she's 12 or 13, at that point, who knows, the Pope might decide to make a crusade, Rahman al-Islam, and all the money will be stolen, and they'll raid the Jewish community, has shown, and you won't have a nickel left to your name, and therefore, we do it. So, again, the exact same thing as we saw before in the Tosfos in Bumpetzia. He says, I She'ein b'zeh mishum chayisim bitochon v'emunah b'Hashem yisbarach. He says, why don't you say, what do you mean? If Hashem gave you money when she's 4, He'll give you money when she's 14. Why don't you say that? Again, you see that if it's normative, the socioeconomic realities of life are such that that's a good probability that that won't be. And now if you have the money at 4 or 5 years old to do it, you should do it. Because the reality is that you won't be able to do it later on, or certainly a high probability. So we see from there that acting in the proper economic reality of that you live in, the social economic reality that you live in, is not a lack of bitachon. It's not a lack of bitachon. And indeed, the Prisadha says, it's like we said before, like the Bambansiya, the Gemara Bambansiya. So it's interesting. So therefore, so too, Rav Avadi Yosef says, therefore, mutar lasos bitua chayim. Therefore, you're allowed to take life insurance. Because, yes, maybe in a perfect world, you should only rely on Hashem. Maybe in a perfect world, you should say, if Hashem supports me, He'll support me all the way through and through. However, nevertheless, we see that this is the normative way people act. This is considered a normal way of establishing in this world, no less normal than marrying off your daughters when they're young, or no less normal of people lending money to goy with ribbish. So therefore, he says, there's no problem at all with buying life insurance. And it's interesting, I just want to point out that in a little bit different than Ramesha certainly came out, it's roy, it's worthy, it's proper. Ravad Yosef ended off, it's mutter. It's mutter. It's interesting, Rabbi Muscat asked me, what about the idea of posei pelus sotam? What about the idea that a person is already planning their death? They're already signing off on their death. So is that any sort of indication of posei pelus sotam, meaning opening the mouth to something that he can give? Don't give the sotam any ideas. Oh, you mentioned your death, who knows what's next? So that's not true, because we find the Rivash. The Rivash writes in the Shuvah in the 1500s. The Rivash writes in the Shuvah in the 1500s. That's the minhag Yisrael to this day. People buy tachrikim. People buy karka. People buy karka. We use the euphemistic word karka. But we buy graves. We buy graves. And people have tachrikim ready. Perfectly healthy people. They have tachrikim ready. They know where they want to be buried. And they buy. It's done all the time. So therefore we see in the Rivashri records this in the 1500s. So therefore we see from here that what could be more of a posei pelapot or something than buying yourself a grave, than preparing yourself tachrikim. But nevertheless people do it. So you see, so too over here, a person buying insurance, there's not any inyan, there's not any aspect of posei pelapot. And therefore, Rav Yosef, as Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that it's permitted to buy life insurance, there's no problem whatsoever. I do want to point out just quickly on the side that the concept of a posei yantas pel sotan, opening your mouth to the sotan, a little bit different than an action of buying land or buying a car or buying insurance. It's rather when you do something which in and of itself is, for instance, the Gemara says one of the reasons the Kohen couldn't enter the Kodesh HaKadoshim with the Shmonim Megodim, with the golden garments, was because Ein Kategor Nasa Sanegor. The gold, which reminds Hashem Yisbarach of the Egel HaZohar, it's not proper that that same gold should be used now in defense of Klal Yisrael. So it says, that's Kadesh Aloni Tempisk and Palasatan. Meaning it's pointing out there's something contradictory over here. There's something or something to grab on that's contradictory. Meaning Posei Palasatan is literally giving him the opportunity to open his mouth. Meaning, wait, there's something wrong here. You're using the same gold that you sinned with Hashem. That same gold is now trying to, quote unquote, show Hashem how much you love him. Just last week it was to show Hashem how much you don't love him. So that's more the idea of a posek halasata, not necessarily buying insurance. So what do we have left? We have over here the idea that number one, Rav Moshe Feinstein says it's totally permitted. Now that permitted, it sounds like it's obligatory based on the pasuk b'zeis atepetoy chalachem in the Mishnah at the end of Kedushin. That what can I do? Harayesius ma'asai, I made my actions evil. The kipakti is parnasasi, and I ruined my parnasa. So you have to work, even though the eventual outcome will be from Hashem Yisbarach. And Rav Elad Yosef as well, saying that same svara that you have to work to make a living, but adding on additional factors that even this idea of embracing the challenges of the socioeconomic times that you live in, be it that the Jewish community had to lend money with interest to the Goyim, notwithstanding the rabbinic prohibition, or the idea of marrying off one's daughters when they're small, notwithstanding the rabbinic prohibition of waiting till they're older. These things were allowed in recognition of this socioeconomic reality, and they didn't take the route. Well, if Hashem can survive, but rather you have to meet with the challenges of the day. And the normative challenges or the normative expectations of the day is that one should purchase insurance policy, and therefore Ravadi also, he leaves off with it also being mutter. I want to point out that a man, Mr. Simon, he gave me a letter dated March 2007, written by Rav Shmuel Firstish, and doing me well, to the Jewish community of the Chicago, and he writes all the stories, tragic accident, parent dies. We hear these stories, they're so frightening so often. And he goes on to say that too many families, they're forced to depend on the communities. It's because these couples do not have life insurance. And therefore, he says, nothing should stop you and your spouse from owning life insurance. Owning life insurance is reversed. Does not show a lack of bitachon. This is the opinion of both Rabbi Moshe Feinstein and Rabbi Yaakov Kametsky. In fact, Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, Rabbi Moshe, writes that by life there is a form of protection that is permitted and obligated by Hashem. And then he goes on to say that he obligates, certainly strongly, it is urgent that both parents have insurance. It is your duty to make sure your family is well and provided for. I do want to point out that one of the impetus to this year was the fact that I work with Rabbi Elchanan Zon, should live me well, from the organization, the National Association of Chevra Kedisha, NAS, and he told me that over COVID, there are 164 Amonas and Yisomim who are left now without their parents, their father in most cases, did not have life insurance. 164, just in that 18, 19 month span when COVID was unfortunately plaguing the nation, that were left as without any sort of insurance. And it is true, we all, I'm sure, here in Chicago, and we know in Passaic, and I'm sure other places as well, It's a burden that the community, it becomes almost impossible for the community to bear for so many people, and B, it could have easily been avoided. It could have been easily avoided, and therefore, I imagine that was the impetus for at first to do this. And also, therefore, Rabbi Zon, he was very big in the meeting we had this year, the Parshas Vayechi, where they push things, so we should push also life insurance. There's a man in Brooklyn, his name is Albert Kahn. Albert Kahn lives in Flatbush, and he made this his mitzvah. He's a self, he's a man, he's, he makes, thank God he makes a living. He's not an insurance agent. Thank God he's in real estate. But he made it his business to try to get people with that they have to get insurance. And he says that he writes to someone wrote him a letter, Nassim Shmuel Khan, that's Albert Khan, being that there's currently an offer of life insurance with very affordable prices. It is proper for the public to take advantage of this opportunity and purchase policies for both men and women. And he writes, signed the Rav Nissim Kareletz, signed the Rav Moshe Halberstam, signed the Rav Aaron Leibsteinman, signed the Rav Yosef Shalom El Yoshev, signed the Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, signed the Rav Chaim Pinchas Scheinberg, signed Harav Shmuel Halevi Vosna. And as I mentioned before, obviously all halacha l'maaseh should be addressed to the Rav exclusively, but nevertheless you'll notice in this letter, I think he did try to get a broad sampling of both Chassidish poskim and non-Chassidic poskim. And he, interesting in my conversations with him and in my own research, basically, and I mean, Mr. Simon probably knows this better than me, but from what I understand, your standard person in America who's up to 40 years old without any clear underlying health conditions can lock in a standard life insurance policy. They lock it in from before the year 40 till the year 60 for approximately $1 million for probably less than $600 a year. Less than $600 a year, one can purchase $1 million worth of, not that $1 million is so much anymore, but $1 million with about $600 a year. At the meeting we had for NASS, Rabbi Pesach Krohn, who was present, who was also very involved, he had this idea, I don't know how much traction perhaps it will get soon, but Rabbi Krohn wanted to start a program that when a couple gets married, you pay for them the first 2 years of their premium. And you present them with an insurance policy, you pay for them as opposed to giving them $1,000, whatever, for the wedding gift, which is common, you give them $1,500, you give them both spouses, you give them 1 year or 2 years paid insurance policy with the hope, said Rabbi Krohn, that once they have the policy, they'll pay. And honestly, I think we realize all of us somehow come up to with the money when Baruch Hashem we were simple, or we have to send our children to camp, or we have to meet the tuition committee's obligations. Many obligations, we have to buy a lulav and an esrog and a hudra when we do come up with money. So we should view insurance policies, they felt very strongly in the same way. What about the other side of the coin? So just briefly, I just want to mention two other sides of the coin. And one is a fascinating incident involving the life of the Chofetz Chaim, Zecher Tzaddik Livracha. Some of us may not know, but the Chofetz Chaim's oldest son, the Arya Leib Kagan, he obviously was very close to his father. He helped his father publish and write the Mishnah Berura. He wrote a very relatively short biography of his father, which was published in a three-volume Kokispe of his father. And unfortunately, the biography only goes to about 1910 or 1911. At that point, Rabbi Arya Leib became ill, and he literally got over it, but he published it and he never continued writing. Therefore, it's not only about a 94-page biography, and most of us are familiar with the much more famous Menachem Mendel Yosher's biography, which was, of course, published in Yiddish initially in the 1930s with Gaskamer and Chaim Isaac Brzezinski, and then again republished in Hebrew by Nesher in three volumes, and then, of course, Artscroll translated into English, I think, in either one or two very large volumes. So in there on page 92, in the original Hebrew of his son's biography, he tells a story that on April 12, 1905, and he writes the English date, by the way, the Yom 12 April, that on the 12th of April, there was a fire that destroyed half the town of Rabin. Half the town of Rabin burnt down, and shockingly enough, a year later, on the exact same day, April 12th, another fire came. And the first fire, the Chofetz Chaim and his whole family Much of his family lived there in Radin. They were saved in the first fire. However, in the second fire, his son writes that this fire unfortunately burnt a lot of their homes, and it went to Beis PC, it went to my brother-in-law's house, my aunt's house was burnt, and then it went to Abba's house, it went to Beis Avi, the house of the Chafetz Chaim himself, and then it went to his house, and it was burnt, and unfortunately their houses were burnt down, and when they went to the Chafetz Chaim said, you know, look how Hashem did chesed with us, because as opposed to burning down the city in 1 year, everything, Hashem decided that the gzeirah should be over time, half 1 year, half the other, that each half could help the other people. That was, of course, the Chafetz Chaim's way of always looking at things with his ayin tayva. But nevertheless, he goes on to tell that the son said that after the first fire happened, his family started tumbling. It was already in 1905. Already, life insurance, fire insurance, property insurance was already more common. But they started saying, "Let's get insurance. Let's get insurance." And the younger members of the family were saying, "It's, you know, time to get insurance." Rabbi Yehuda writes, his own children came to him. The Chafetz Chaim at that point was about 70, and so he was probably out of 50. His children were probably 30, so they said, you know, let's buy insurance. So they went to the Chafetz Chaim, and he said that Radnu b'nei Beisi al Maisa Abba, the grandchildren, his children, I mean Rabbi Yehuda's children, were upset with the grandfather. Were upset with the grandfather of the Chafetz Chaim. She'enu machtiach es beiso ba'achar ra'yus me'olam. Why didn't the Chafetz Chaim take insurance on his house? Look, his house burned down now. And ukimaseu nahakti gabanofi. Obviously, Rabbi Yehuda said, whatever the Tata did, I did. So the Chafetz Chaim didn't take insurance. I didn't take insurance. The longest tafti is basic. I didn't obviously insure my house. And when we asked him that time after the first fire, should we now buy insurance? Abba Anali, the Tumay, Abba answered me in his tremendous sticker, the Chafetz Chaim was a talking about, "Hey, Abba Hashem, Chesed is over menu. He who trusted Hashem will be surrounded by Chesed, the lo yikra kol ra. And no evil will happen to the person." So, and lo imkein mevachim tachbulus. So he said, when you start to pull shtick, you look for tachbulus, buy insurance, maybe this. Chafetz Chaim felt that's where you lose this aspect of bitachon. Fascinatingly enough, there is some book, some svarim. That's why I always important to get to the source. Very important to get to the source. There are some svarim that leave the story off here. However, if you look inside of the source, the story does not end there. The Chafetz Chaim did not buy insurance to his house. However, his son says over that b'nei beisi choshku aferis. Actually, my children thought that the Zayin was not correct in this approach, in this situation, and therefore take ef kasher nizdam en b'yireinu hachoysim. Immediately when the insurance agent came around to Radin to try to sell policies, if Tachnu is based Abba, the Yachad in base Achoysu based in the South, 2,200 rubles. We went ahead and we took out the grandchildren took out insurance on the Zayda, on the Chafetz Chaim's house, and on their father's house, and below Sikru La'avim B'Shas Maisa. They didn't tell their grandfather, they didn't tell their father, they did it without their knowledge. They bought this insurance policy. And after they bought it, he writes, Ma alos nafshenu, how happy we were, v'hodenu l'Hashem, we thanked Hashem that our children were smarter, shenbasin b'libom l'hagen l'askil l'tiyach esvetenu, that Hashem gave us grandchildren that outsmarted us and bought insurance, how beautiful it was. It would have been that we would have been left closeless, without any clothes, arumim, if it wouldn't have been for the insurance. And then he adds off with an unbelievable line. Ubitzedek haya yochol mar'ava lemor nitzchuni banai, nitzchuni banai. And at this, obviously, paraphrasing the Gemara, but that the Chofetz Chaim was justified, or he was correct, and he realized he was right, and said, my children were victorious over me, my children were correct. So again, you can take of this what you want, but that's an incident with the Chofetz Chaim vis-a-vis insurance. Finally, I'm just going to conclude with, there's recently was published, oh, I think it's 6 or 7 volume, Maisa Ish, a very long set of somewhat biographical material about the life of the Chazon Ish, the Baruch Hu. It doesn't really follow in any sort of necessarily chronological order, but it has a lot of anecdotal information. And on page Kuf Pei He Aleph, I think it's Chelek Gimel, it says the following: Nifnas Yehudi Bal Mishpacha V'Shah. A man who had a large family came in and asked the Chofetz Chazon Ish, Metziim li lasos bitua chayim. They want me to take out life insurance. Hayim rui lasos, so should I take out life insurance? Heshiv Rabbeinu. So the Chazon Ish said, L'shlila, no, do. Don't take out life insurance. Why? L'famim magia zmano shalodom elishav arifin yomav amenash yifarnas ishto vanov. Sometimes a person is supposed to leave this world. His time is up. His time is up. However, when Hashem Yisbarach is about to give the okay to the Malach HaMovis, he sees Nebuch, that the man is a wife, the man has children. So Eivishter says, how can I take him now? So Eivishter says, you know what? No, take him off the list. But his time is up. It doesn't matter. Give him an extension. Give him an extension. However, when he's insured, if he's insured, then Hashem says, okay, time is up. It's okay, you know, whatever, the life insurance policy, they'll pay for it. So again, you know, this is, if one wants to take this halacha l'maaseh, again, the rub is here, I'm sure, you know, he'll answer all these halacha shailos. But the kitcher that we did see that, we saw a number of poskim maneh, most notably Rosh Schweitzer, Rabbi Yosef, who Moshe for sure indicates that it's something obligatory for first. Should live and be well, even though the Chaim Tovim Arufim certainly felt it was obligatory, the dying here in Chicago. Rabbi Yosef certainly felt it was fine to do and no problem whatsoever. And even Mr. Chofetz Chaim, although he had his hesitations initially, nevertheless, as the story seems to indicate at the end, that the fact that the children did have life insurance seems to have been advantageous for him and his family. And then, of course, we had the incident of the Chazon Ish, where he felt that could be a person's unfortunate demise, as he doesn't have that extra excuse which could possibly save his life. Bezos Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, may whoever of us do have insurance policy, Bezos Hashem, all that money should just go to the insurance company. We never should have to use it. It should just go there. We should Bezos Hashem, a person who reveals all, Arichas Yomim, Parnosa, the Rebbe, the Benachas, and Bezos Hashem, we should be Zayta, to see one of them, may one of them, whiskey, the Torah, and the Mitzvahs.
Stoyach. Now it's clear.